On January 1st, 1863, the final version of the Emancipation Proclamation was brought to the White House for Abraham Lincoln to sign. It was brought to the White House on a large piece of parchment and brought in by Secretary of State Seward, who was accompanied by his young son, Frederick. And they spread it out on a table in the cabinet room of the White House. And Abraham Lincoln sat down to sign it. Years later, Frederick, now an adult, would write about that scene. And here's what he said. Mr. Lincoln dipped his pen in the ink and then, holding it a moment above the sheet, seemed to hesitate. Looking around, he said, I never in my life felt more certain that I was doing right than I do in signing this paper. But I have been receiving calls and shaking hands since 9 o'clock this morning till my arm is stiff and numb. Now this signature is one that will be closely examined. And if they find my hand trembled, they will say he had some compunctions. But anyway, it's going to be done. So saying, he slowly and carefully wrote his name at the bottom of the proclamation. You can easily Google a picture of the original Emancipation Proclamation and look at his signature, and you can see how carefully and deliberately, and how he pressed the pen down with the ink to make sure it didn't appear to be shaking. He signed his name. He meant it. There were no compunctions. This is the day that we have been asked to sign our names at the bottom of a pledge card to support the ministries of this church. It is a day when we do not hesitate, a day when with quiet determination we sign our card and place it in the offering plate. And we mean it. No hesitation, no compunctions. Some people think that Pledge Sunday is a day of arm twisting, a day when the preacher is supposed to preach a sermon designed to make you feel guilty if you don't pledge or if you don't pledge enough. I want to say this morning that Pledge Sunday is not about arm twisting. Pledge Sunday is a day of celebration. It's a day when we celebrate God's faithfulness to us and our faithfulness to God. When I was growing up, Pledge Sunday was a day when a wooden model of the church was brought in and placed on the communion table. And that wooden model had a slit in the top, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of you had this same experience. When it came time for the members of the church to turn in their pledge card, they marched down to the front and put their pledge card through the slit in the top of that model. It was a powerful symbol of the faithfulness of that congregation that I will never forget. It really struck me as a powerful thing. Because even though the individual pledges were private, the actual pledging itself was public. We live in a different world today, don't we? Money matters are intensely private. This is, after all, New England. I learned that the hard way when I became pastor of First Baptist Church of Newton, Massachusetts. I had this image in my mind of that wooden model that I grew up seeing, and so I asked one of the architects in the church if he could make a model of the church, which he did. He placed it on the communion table on Pledge Sunday, and I called for the whole congregation to march forward, you know, and put their pledge cards in the slit in the top of the model. And it seemed to work fine, except for one family that was so furious that they left the church. Privacy. They did not want to be asked to come forward. And so since that time, recognizing the fact that a lot of people send their pledge cards in early, I have not followed that practice. You'll be happy to hear. But I do still feel something of that powerful symbol of everybody being a part. It's part of the health of a shared commitment, a united act of faithfulness, and it's still very inspiring even when we don't march down to the front but place our cards in the offering plate. Now, not surprisingly, Jesus had something to say about faithfulness. He told the story about three servants who were given 5 talents, 2 talents, and 1 talent, respectively. And the master, obviously a symbol for God in this story, leaves town, and the servants are left with the decision of what to do with their master's money. And at the end of the story, the master returns and compliments 2 of the servants with those familiar and moving words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." But I've always been bothered by the severity of the reprimand that the master gives to the 3rd servant who buried his money in the backyard and returned every cent of that money to the master. He is called wicked and lazy. And then comes that terrible phrase that leaves us baffled. "To those who have shall more be given, and from those who have not, even the little they have shall be taken away." What can we say about a statement like that? Is that a fit thing to be reading in a Christian pulpit? "To those who have, they shall receive more." To the Wall Street tycoons who already get Christmas bonuses in the millions. To the professional athletes who measure their contracts in 7 figures. Tonight, Tom Brady will make $914,170 for 1 week of work. And I'll be cheering him on. But I'm also aware that he is making $914,000+ tonight, win or lose. More? And to the struggling minimum wage burger turner to the single mother cleaning rooms in a second-class hotel, even what little they have shall be taken away? Is that what this text is saying? It's baffling. Where is the grace in this text? It seems so harsh, so cruel, so un-Christian. Where is the grace in this master who's so tough on this well-intentioned, entirely honest and scrupulous servant who returned every penny of the money the master gave? Where's the grace? Truth is, grace permeates the story, the whole story, if you look at it closely. It runs throughout the whole account. It is there from the very first line. The master is going away on a journey and he summons his three servants and gave them not some of his money, not just a little cash to tide them over until he got back. What does the text say? He gave them everything, his entire substance, everything he had. He put every last penny of his money in their care. That means that when he returned, everything of what he has, his entire estate, has been utterly dependent on what they have done with his substance. If they've blown it, he's bankrupt. He has given them everything until he gets back. Now, it's worth noting that this is a story that Jesus told toward the end of his ministry, just before he begins his final journey toward the cross. It is, after all, found in Matthew 25. That's toward the end. He's about to leave his disciples, and he must have been wondering how his disciples would use the gifts he has given them. His concerns about them must have been not that they would be too careless, but that they would be too careful. They would abuse the substance of what he had given them by being too careful with it. In other words, substance abuse is not being too risky, but being too careful with what God has given us. In the story he told, the two servants who were complimented were the ones who were willing to take risks. Now let's think about that. The story is clearly suggesting that the master is looking for a few wheeler dealers with whom to wheel and deal. Pledge Sunday is a time to wheel and deal. Making a pledge to the church is not giving God a gratuity for God's service to us. God is not a divine waiter at our life's table. God has put the whole world into our hands. God has entrusted us with God's whole property. That is grace. That's what God has done for us. We decide ourselves when we think, we delude ourselves when we think that what we have is ours. It all belongs to God. The question is, what are we going to do with it? How will we invest the gifts God has given us? I have to ask, where are the wheeler dealers in the church these days? If there's a problem with the church budget, it's not that it's too high, it's that it's far too low. Wouldn't it be wonderful If those of us who have already filled out our pledge card and placed it in the offering envelope, ready to put it in the plates, would open it up and mark through the text right now and start over and do some real wheeling and dealing, taking some risks, wouldn't it be wonderful if we invested our resources in a way that allowed us to expand the ministries of this church? Wouldn't it be wonderful if the moderator had to call a special business meeting in order to ask, how would you like to use all of these additional funds? This interim time is no time to be content with business as usual. It is time for some wheeling and dealing of this church's resources. And that wheeling and dealing will take every single one of us, young and old, rich and poor, working and retired, and I can even add students and regular visitors. Everybody to be involved. Some people look at the sermon on Pledge Sunday and think that the preacher is like a spiritual used car salesman trying to sell a clunker and acting like it's the greatest thing on the road. But Pledge Sunday is not about slick salesmanship. It's about a serious and joyful act of faithfulness. No one is trying to get anyone here to buy something that they don't want or need. Like you, I am a fellow worshiper, a recipient of more blessings than I can possibly count. And I am in debt to the church in general and, to be frank, to this church in general. I mean, in specific, because you have blessed me already in this short time. I propose that we view the offering of our pledge cards the way an ancient priest offered sacrifices to God. Remember what he did? He chose the very best sheep he could find. One that the Bible calls a lamb without spot or blemish. And there before the altar, he would offer the best in behalf of God's people. So let us decide today that we will pledge the best that we can. Call it a pledge without blemish. And then let this church have some fun with God's money. Do some wheeling and dealing. Take some risks. And let this moment of pledging be an explosion of faithfulness. And then listen closely, for you may hear a still small voice saying, well done, good and faithful servants.